Welcome back to the Ag Bowl Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Grisafi. Today's podcast was recorded in the Ag Bowl Media Studio in Valparaiso, Indiana, and I am so happy to have one of the first people I met when I moved to Valparaiso, Mr. Chris Malman from Valpo Life. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot for having me in your studio, Tommy.
Now, you and I, when I met you, I didn't realize that you have a background in markets and grain and what you're doing with Valpo Life and what we're going to talk about today with media. When I started Ag Bowl Media, I wrote on my list 6 months ago, the first person to call was Chris Malman. But I never called you till a week ago. Now I have all this stuff, but now I want you to tell your story, how you got involved in markets and media and why Valpo and why Valpo Life. Now you have to understand, people listening to this show are from all over the country and all over the world. They don't know what Valpo Life is. But start with you from the beginning, and enough about me. Talk about yourself the whole rest of the show. Talk about your family and from the beginning and Chicago and how it all came together, sir.
Well, markets sort of are at the core of my being, literally and physically. My dad came over from Germany when he was 18 years old, or 17 years old, I think. And my grandfather was a grain merchant in Germany and wanted his son to come learn about the markets. So he sent his son, my dad, to Chicago for 6 months or a year to go learn everything about the futures markets. And during that period of time, my dad met my mom, and he ended up staying here to extend that a couple times on a work visa. He needed to go back at some point, and they got married, then had three kids, and I grew up living in the financial markets for the rest of my life. My siblings both worked in the markets. The people that we met mostly worked in the markets. Family friends were related to the markets. So most of my knowledge base growing up was related to the board, the Merck, the NYMEX, quotes around the world, technology, whatever it was. But it was always related to trading.
That is wild. And I didn't know that story about the grain merchant until today. You're like, how is this going to tie into grain markets? And I'm like, well, it's the latter part. But then you go, well, I got something in the beginning, and that just blew my mind. I'm like, well, that has to go in there.
We would go down to the Board of Trade constantly as a kid and talk, you know, see what's happening on the floor. We'd go down there for their holiday events and visit the Merck. My first job that I ever had was a runner on the Merck floor, and it was a great experience. I loved every minute of it. Worked at an order desk for Stotler back in the day. Worked back again for brokerage firms or exchanges throughout a good portion of my life. And then last segment, spent 13 years, last 5 or 6 years, running FutureSource, one of the market data vendors, specifically for futures and options markets. So everything I did from the minute I, you know, was a little kid was somehow related to the markets or people related to the market. So all started in the ag market. And obviously, you know, my dad was Cash Bowman, literally named Cash for talking about the cash grain markets. So that's sort of my founding. And then it all ended up leading here in Valpo with meeting my beautiful wife from Valparaiso, Indiana, working at the Board of Trade.
Did Natalie work there?
She worked there.
I didn't know that.
That's how we met.
And she's a longtime listener, first time caller of the show here. Yeah. She's probably going to be one of the only people who listens to this.
Yeah. She will absolutely love this
story. Well, let's get the dirt.
She walked in. I was working in the marketing department at the Board of Trade, and a woman named Beth Hill walked her around the office on her very first day and knocked on my door and said, hey, you know, we've got the new girl coming in. I wanted to introduce you. And Natalie turned a corner of my office, and I looked at her, and I reached out, shook her hand and said hello. And I knew in a nanosecond I was going to marry her. Like, not, it was my first immediate thought. I didn't think anything else of, I'm going to marry this woman. And she walked around the office, introduced herself to a couple other people. There's a friend of mine, Jim Crystal, that worked in the office at the time. I ran around to his office afterwards, and I said, did you meet her? And he's like, who? And I said, the new girl, Natalie. Like, who in the world could I possibly be talking about other than her? And he's like, yeah, she's pretty cute. I'm like, cute? You're not. I'm going to marry the woman. She's just fantastic.
How old were you guys?
I was probably, I don't know.
Was it even legal?
26.
Oh, it was legal. Yeah.
And she was a couple years younger than that. But I just knew in a nanosecond that I was going to marry her.
And four kids later?
Two kids later. I had two already.
Okay.
So two kids later, but we got married a couple years later and eventually ended up moving here to Valpo. And that's ultimately what led to my whole business is I moved to Valpo. I didn't really like what I read or saw or listened to from a media standpoint about Valpo in Northwest Indiana. It seemed overtly negative. And one of those principles my mom taught me years and years ago, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And that's incredibly hard for me to do personally, but professionally, I said, I think that's what's missing is just a positive focus on something local. So that's what ultimately led me here. A really cute girl, fell in love with her, brought me to Valpo, and my mom teaching me to focus on the positive and the need for what I felt like was missing here locally. That's ultimately what got me here. And that's how I met you.
That's pretty cool. And so when we talk about Valpo Life and the, is it the Good News Network or?
Great News Life.
Great News Life. I don't think people can understand, but they are going to when you get done with them, from what this started with one office, couple cameras. Go back from the beginning.
Again, I'm a information absorber. I read, watch, listen to hundreds of different things. Coming from a markets background, you're used to looking at tickers up on the wall. You're used to looking at screens and charts and quotes and graphs and all kinds of news indicators. And when I came to Northwest Indiana, that's what I wanted to do. I'm not from here. I wanted to learn everything it was about the area. So I listened to the local radio stations. I watched what at the time was a local TV station. I read both of the or three of the papers that were here in the region. And it didn't paint a very good picture of where I had moved. And I was like, okay, but there's nothing on the Memorial Opera House. And I've been there for a concert and it's actually pretty cool. Like, why isn't that like in the paper? I started getting involved at the Porter County Career and Tech Center here just as a mentor board member person.
Were you still working in Chicago then?
I was still working in the financial markets, not in Chicago specifically, but I basically had clients around the country and mostly worked out of my home office.
Before that was cool.
Yeah, now it's really trendy and I did it long before it was actually cool. But I started to meet a lot of people, particularly in education, but I started to meet an awful lot of people that were doing amazingly great things. And I would ask them, why isn't that like in the paper? Why isn't that on TV? Why am I not hearing about that on local radio? And they would say, well, good news doesn't always get a lot of attention. So from a trader's perspective, I was like, okay, if everybody's ignoring something, there's probably an opportunity there if you paid attention to it. And then I thought, maybe at a deeper level, if I don't really like all the negativity that I'm reading, maybe there's other people that don't like that either. And ultimately, if my mom's right, there should be a lot of people that would like to hear positive things about whatever their communities are doing or people in their communities are doing. So long story short, I put together what I thought was a great little 6-page PowerPoint, and I went to Radio 1 here in Valpo. It's now Adams Radio, but Radio Lee Ellis here in Valpo, Tom Carroll out at Lakeshore TV, and Bill Masterson at the Times in Munster. And I gave my little fancy 6-page PowerPoint and said, I think you're totally missing the boat. You're overly focused on negative. I think you're sort of drifting away from hyperlocal. I think people in Valpo want to care about Valpo. People in Chesterton want to care about Chesterton. People in Dyer have zero interest in Valpo and vice versa. So I was suggesting to them that they might be losing the bead, so to speak, from a story perspective on what's happening locally and just such a massive influence on the police blotter and the crime reports and just scummy stuff that happens in life. I'm not a Pollyannish. I clearly, I grew up on a trading floor. People speak super, super, super clearly.
Before the show, we went over all the cuss words we've ever heard there. Yeah, now, we like, won't go over those again, but it was, we sure did giggle before we hit roll the camera.
And you heard all those words by like 7:45 in the morning. And then you might hear them 100 other times that day. It was just part of the lexicon back there. And it's not, obviously, particularly not in the Good News world, but it's not really the lexicon here. So you learn to choose your words more carefully as you get a little bit older as well. But I just knew there was the potential. So
what year was this, Chris? What year
did you start? 2008 is when I first started having those conversations.
When did Facebook start? When did you? It's about that same time, right?
About that same time.
So I got on Twitter in 08, 09.
Yeah.
And that was like new. Someone told me about it. They're like, there's this thing. And you know what? Back then, Twitter is, today you got on TikTok, by the way.
Yeah.
That's what.
So I'm obviously not a new media maverick, clearly.
Maybe a few months
later. I just got on TikTok and it's 2022, so.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And actually, I don't think Twitter's as cool as it used to be. And I think a lot of the folks I knew from Twitter are now on TikTok, and most are wearing clothes, some aren't. I mean, it's a wild space there. That is PG-13 plus 5 more years. I mean, that's Adult Swim only there. Of course, there's all types there. Getting off the subject, but when you started Valpo Life, we had internet. Facebook was brand new. Twitter was brand new. LinkedIn, I don't think we had that. I don't know.
It might have been there, but it was a very, very small influence. Part of our biggest challenge was you had to introduce people not to a new way of thinking about media, but also electronically. Most of them were like, I don't need any of that stuff electronically. I have my newspaper. I got it today.
Right. And who do you know who still gets paper delivered?
Very, very few people.
Just people like to kill trees.
I'm a big fan of reading the Wall Street Journal in print, physically.
Yeah, old school. Cup of coffee.
Yep, and I love newspapers. I actually like printed material. I probably subscribe to 20 magazines and get them all physically every month. Like, I'm not against print. It's just impossible to print a daily paper and drive it around and have all that liability
cost and execution. Keep it pertinent and on time, right?
Yeah, and have it be pertinent and just afford to do it. And I think the companies that shifted too late to digital, they really struggled because they have a cost basis that's based on print where you could charge a heck of a lot more for that ad in print than you can online. And I think we were lucky in some ways to be early. And I knew there's just no way we're going to launch something in print. I watched people on the trading floor where traders that had been there for decades said, technology is not going to take this away. We're going to be here on the floor forever. It's not going to all turn to computers.
I think a couple of those guys tried to sell me insurance last week and whatever. They're all selling something now. They all went from traders to like, you know what you need? Yeah, tell me what I need.
I watched all of that happened. And I just said, okay, in the news business, that's absolutely going to happen. There's no way it's not going to happen, no matter how good you are. And why not tie that shift to an online media to a different focus where you literally take all bad parts out? And it's not like I'm presenting this is exactly what life in Valpo was like, or Crown Point or Highland or whatever the other communities. I'm clearly saying this is the best of those communities. It's not everything. If you want to learn about the car crash or the, you know, politician that is going to jail, or you want to hear some controversy about what's happening at schools, don't come to us ever. Like, we'll never have it. And that's probably the thing I think people at the beginning said won't work. And then after a while, they said, yeah, it works, I guess, but he's still going to go to the dark side once he really sees the money potential. I see the money potential every day. I'm not going to the dark side.
I can relate to that in a few ways. Real quick, you didn't tell me about day one, though. Day one, you start Valpo Life. So those guys laugh at you, right? The way you kind of said it, they laugh you out of their office, I assume.
Yeah.
Do you talk to any of them now or whatever happened to them?
I've talked to Bill Masterson in the mirror hundreds of times, probably over that 13 years, when I'm shaving and you're in year two or year three, one, two, three, four, five, I don't know, any one of those years, and you're really struggling and you're going upwind against competitors and customers and all those other things. I would talk to him pretty often when I'm shaving and just be like, there's no way you're going to win. There's just no way. I don't care if it takes me forever. But yeah, so they're, I look at any of those doubters in the beginning, they're the fuel that gets you there. And I needed the fuel to get me there. So I'm actually thankful for them.
Sometimes when people insult you, it motivates you. I think of so many instances in my own life, but one in particular, I left the floor. I was doing well on the floor, but I thought it was all going electronic. I went to Germany to the Eurex exchange and they didn't have a pit. And I came back to Chicago and told my mom and dad, I got to get out of here. They go, but you're killing it. I said, yeah, but it's going away. My timing was wrong. It lasted quite a bit longer than I thought, but I adapted and I moved on to electronic trading. And here we are sitting. If you would have told me in 2022, Tom and Chris are going to meet at my basement, it's going to look like the floor of the Board of Trade. We're going to have tickers and screens. And
this is absolutely nuts in here. It's very much along the lines of what I would imagine you to have. But seeing all these screens up here, seeing the great displays, the lights, all the stuff that you figured out from the podcast on a technology side, to me, it's a perfect example of someone using technology to completely adapt to whatever the environment is, whether it's COVID, whether it's people coming off the trading floor, whether it's the benefit of internet connectivity throughout the world. Literally, you have here what the CME or the Board of Trade would have. And back then, they were the only ones that had it.
Right.
Like if you wanted to have a broadcast, you'd have to go to a big studio place. Now, literally, this studio can be here. When you go to North Dakota, you can have your studio there.
Mayville, North Dakota. Population 2,000, yeah.
An ag trade conference, you could have your studio there.
Yeah, it's COVID to me was a blessing. I know people have lost loved ones. I have, but in a strange way, COVID motivated me to bring out something in myself that I like. Hey, I have a secret. It's like a coming out of the closet party that I love doing this stuff. I just didn't want to leave my house and go drive to Chicago and go to the floor, swipe my key card and start turning the cameras on, which brings me to when I wanted to have you down, I just want to ask you one question. It could last an hour, but what is media? What does media mean? What was traditional media on your website? You say words about traditional media. When you think of the word media and what it was, what's happened, because the first day I ever went to the Board of Trade, went out to the Chicago Board of Trade in 1989, a high school field trip. We also went to the Chicago Sun-Times. And one business has changed hands 12 times since then. The other still owned by the members, which has since went public, and now you could buy a share of CME Group. So one's done better than the other, but one went 100% electronic, and that was the CME Group. And the other's trying to do traditional print. The world's changed.
Yeah. I think when you think about media is ultimately content. Whatever form it's in, whether it's in printed form, audio form, visual form, electronic form that could be distributed all over the place, it only comes via a broadcast signal, whatever form it's in, ultimately the content has to be engaging. When we started out, I looked at it as, I don't want to come in and tell people, oh, there's this cool site in Valpo, it's going to have lots and lots of stuff, you should just imagine what it's going to be. So we spent from November through March literally covering every single thing we possibly could. From November of October of 08 to March of 2009.
During a financial crisis, by the way.
Yeah, it was about the worst time you could probably think to start a business. But, you know, hey, I had the chip on my shoulder and I was going to go run with it. But at that time, we just said, I want to come out with it and have it be an existing product. I don't want to ask for people's credibility about what I might build. So we went out and created videos and took photos and wrote articles so that the day we launched, the day we could tell the world about it, I wanted it to be full of stuff. And that's probably from back to your question about media. What is media? It's ultimately the content and how you distribute them. Like we're talking about TikTok. TikTok wasn't a thing 5-6 years ago. Twitter wasn't a thing prior to it being the thing. Instagram wasn't the thing prior to it being the thing that was going to replace Facebook. None of this was the thing before Snapchat. And all of those, I think, have made the media market much more segmented, but it's also made it highly responsive, where you could talk to anybody in the ag markets in 5 minutes on their phone, patched into this panel, and bring them together to a worldwide audience.
It's very powerful.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful. But I think what's awesome about it, even from a media company person, is how much power is transferred to the content creator. And if you have something unique, you don't need to go to ABC or CBS or Reuters or Bloomberg. You don't need to go to these gigantic audiences to have an outlet. You can do it all on your own, on your phone, or in a basement studio, or in something as high-tech and cool as this, which is tricked out to
pretty
the
much
nines.
If you have an iPhone, though, you have the start of a media company.
Yeah. Some people, when the newest iPhone comes out every year, some people are aghast that it's going to cost $1,000 or $1,500. And
look at what
God,
you're getting.
It's just crazy to spend that much money on a phone. I look at my phone and I just say, okay, well, I got a photo studio, a video studio, a worldwide.
Remember that picture that was on the internet of
device?
This is everything this device used to be?
Yeah.
Who has an alarm clock in their bedroom? Like an old alarm clock. You just tell it, I want to wake up at 4:30. It beeps. I don't know how it does it.
Everything that we do could ultimately be done on a phone. There's times where, like here in this studio, you've got it tricked out where you're not dependent on a phone, but your ultimate story, let's say all this stuff broke tomorrow or wasn't working for some reason, your ultimate story is gonna, could get told in a phone. And so I think all of the technology around the content is important. But remember when podcasts first came out? They were sort of a dud, and some trendy people would listen to podcasts, and then it sort of died. Now podcasts are the rage, and everybody wants to have a podcast. But podcasts, when they first came out, weren't anything.
They've been around for quite a while. About 04, 05, it started when iTunes.
Yeah,
about 4 or 5 years before this. We're going on 20 years.
And if you probably looked at a chart of podcasting, it was like, and then came down pretty hard, and now it's off the charts.
Yeah, but one thing I know about podcasting is, just from looking at statistics, is most people quit after it was 8 weeks, 8 episodes, 8 months. They get podcast burnout. I have a list of like 100 people I want to interview. We're on number 3, and you're number 3. Really, in my heart, you're number 1. And I really have to, I'm smiling, you're smiling. I wish the cameras were on. This podcast would be vocal only. And at the other studio, we have the cameras, and we'll have the cameras here soon, too. And we could do this again. But I look up to you. I look up to you so much. I watch what you do. And when I see your crews at my daughter's gymnastics or soccer and the pictures you put out, Gina was just down here. You were telling her about your pictures. From when I called you a year and a half ago and said, what's that card thingy that can help your camera go into your computer? And to think of what I did. And one of the ways I did it, and give them credit, they don't know we're doing it. There's a company on YouTube called Think Media.
Okay.
And all they do is put out content. So when I look at your website and I see management, then you have the, you know, full-time staff and then all those kids, I could just think of 10 videos I'd love to circle and send you and say, have those kids in high school watch these videos from Think Media, because he does tons of videos. And one of my guys I look up to, his name's, I think it's Tom Brand. I got to look. But I found him on YouTube, and the other day I reached out to him on Twitter and I said, I just want to tell you, I'm getting going on my thing. And half the reason I understand any of this is because of you. And I wanted to say thank you. And I'm meeting people from all over. Well, I feel like I know them, but I don't.
It's an odd thing when you meet people on social media, just because they may know an awful lot about you and what you're doing. You obviously may know nothing about them, or maybe you know a little bit about them. But it's an odd thing when you meet those people in person. The part I enjoy about it the most is when I see somebody in person that knows me online, and they come up and they say, hey, I wanted to tell you about something. In my world, at least, they want to tell me about something positive. They'll come up to me. Hey, you got to do a story. This morning, I'm at, bought a car from Thomas Kia up there today for some service this morning. As soon as I see Tom Seeley from Thomas Kia, we're talking about a story of Dr. Ballin out of Chesterton that just recently saved a patient's life because they had all the equipment there in the office at a dentist up in Chesterton. And that's basically the kind of story leads people call me with every day.
And if you're working
in the media business, it's really nice when someone calls you a story about a dentist that saved a guy's life.
So you've probably stayed away from the COVID talk?
We've tried to do a lot of educational assistance and communication about COVID.
You know, it's going to hit you with the hard one. You're smiling. You're like, what are you doing?
There's no great way to respond to it. And it's the, if you go back to all the ages we've had in media, it's the one that I've never seen divide people greater than anything else. If you think of all the political issues, you know, we're both a couple ages, couple years on us. if you think of all the political issues that have been touched on during all that period of time, when have you seen something that divides people as much as this?
I can give you a list of people I don't hang out anymore because their opinions, and they're really good people. I just, but when other people tell me how to live my life, I get a little concerned, right?
Well, you're a markets guy. You like free markets. You like free exchange of information. Anytime the government is messing with what you're doing, you're probably a little bit sensitive to that.
Hi, I'm from the government. I'm here to help. Hey, that gentleman's name who I watched, and for anyone listening to this who wants to start a podcast or just wants to know how to do this stuff, the guy's name's Tom Buck. He's phenomenal, which reminds me of, you know, the Bucks here from Valpo, one of my favorite places to go.
Lincoln Flats.
Lincoln Flats, yeah. Dr. Buck's always in there and his family, wonderful people. And then his son-in-law is the printers, and that's what makes Valparaiso great, right? People are like, why do you get your printing done in Valparaiso? I'm like, because Dr. Buck's son-in-law owns it, and he's awesome. I mean, that's enough for me. I don't, you know.
It's some of the things that I liked about moving here this so much is you meet people, and this is their lifelong business, and they've got a whole history here. And you just go back. You could go back and Valpo basketball coaches, and there's a history. You could go back to the local printers, and there's history.
Your father-in-law, your brother-in-law, the tradition. Yeah, look at my straight teeth. Who did that?
Yeah, well, thank you that Dr. Kavanaugh did yours, just like he has done or is in the process of doing mine. I'm a Invisalign patient. And I got a couple weeks to go, and then I'll be back to what I was like at the end of my braces in sophomore year of high school.
When you smiled at Natalie, and she's like, oh,
she's like, who's that? Oh, yeah, it's him.
Crazy world we live in. I have a bunch of questions here, too, media, but this is your chance to brag a little bit. When you talk about Valpo Life from what it was and what it is now, Gina was down here a little bit ago, and you were talking about the pictures. Now, we buy pictures off of Valpo Life, and someone listening who's not from this area, you know, They're like, why are you guys talking about this? But we are going to tie in, and this is the end question. I'll give it to you now so you can think about it. This is the Ag Bull podcast, and the way we're going to end the show is there are people listening to this podcast from all over the world, all over the country, who live in really small rural communities. And when I think about Valpo Life and I think about having you on the Ag Bull podcast, I think about someone like me who moved out of Valpo recently and moved to North Dakota and started a full-blown production studio in a little town. When people from that town come down to the studio, they're like, this is crazy. How'd you do this? I go, well, it's really simple. There's a company called Midco, and they have fiber internet. And with that little piece of fiber, I can do anything. I say, hey,
anything is possible.
Sit down. In 5 minutes, I'm going to go live on TV. Hold on. I got to put a little makeup on. They're like, you wear makeup? I go, yeah, look at me. They're like, you're really putting on makeup. I go, yeah, I think we get this done. Yeah. And from Mayville, North Dakota, I go live on national TV, and that I try not to have an ego as I get older. I'm trying to get better. But that one, I always smile. When there's someone in my basement that, you know, a client or a friend or, most important, Chris, their kids. When there's a kid from Mayville University who's like, I go, I know you think you live in a small town, but let me show you something. If you knew how I grew up and how bad I did in high school and what I became, which is still questionable. But, hey, we're doing something, right? We're getting up. We're challenging the system. We're doing something in. You do that every day, and it's just amazing, just amazing.
We started, I mean, the mission was very, very simple. It wasn't like it was an elaborate plan that I had thought out very well. Mostly the idea had gotten challenged or dismissed, and I said, well, that guy can't be right. I'm going to have to do it now. And even the timing of that was funny because I called my wife after I'd left my last meeting, and she said, hey, honey, what's up? And I said, we're going to start a good news company in Valpo online. And she's like, oh, since when? And I said, well, I've been driving about 6 minutes since Munster, so about that long. And she said, so what's the plan? And I said, well, we're going to figure all that out, but like, it's going to work great. And her last question was, are you going to need any help? And you touched on the team that we have. Well, still 12, 13 years later, we got 15 full-time employees and another dozen people on the coverage team and 35 people on our number one student journalism team throughout the region. All those people get paid every week by Natalie. So she's helped me a little bit sort of along the way.
She's helped me a lot more than that. Now when she does listen to this, you're going to be making your own supper and definitely
for quite a long time
wearing dirty underwear for a week at least.
But it just shows you, like, when you put your mind to something, you could do it as long as you have the right people around you. Yeah. I couldn't do anything I do without my wife.
It's amazing. I haven't announced it yet, but I have a couple a couple things we're going to be doing with the Egg Bowl podcast, some neat giveaways. And I asked some local farmers, local businesses. I have sponsors for the podcast. We'll start announcing those here in the next few weeks. But I could be the only guy in history to have sponsorship and donations for something that never happened. And when you realize that people believe in you that much, when you don't even believe in yourself most days, and you're like, I don't know why I'm doing this. No one's going to listen. All those things you think, which still may happen, but we have to push forward. I have to push forward and say, this isn't going to work. And this is why. And I just created the most expensive hobby in the world for myself, because financially I have a job. I have several jobs. I'm a broker. I'm a trader. This is like a project that I saw a need. That people in agriculture want to tell their story.
Everyone wants to tell their story.
As much as I want to talk about what you're about, I would love if you started asking me questions about my daughter and gymnastics and my wife and her family's pizza. And I could talk about myself for hours. But that's not what this show's about.
And but you're ultimately very similar. You want to tell stories. You want to hear stories. You want to tell stories. I think everybody likes hearing stories. And if you think about news and information or media, you can get facts and information all over the place. You can get more than probably one person could digest. But they want someone to tell them a story. They want to hear somebody's story. And I think that's probably the commonality is you're using technology to reach out and connect to people.
In rural America,
yeah, right. In rural America that they probably think, I don't have a voice here. That doesn't relate to what I'm doing.
They do. Right. And you don't have to spend a lot of money. And if anyone ever has any questions, I'm a very easy guy to get a hold of. I can show you for a couple $100 how you can get something like this started. To take it to another level, that's up to you. And baby steps, one man's floor is another man's ceiling. And the word media, I guess my view of media changed after the election, regardless of how the election turned out. And then we had, COVID and closing downs. And one day we're wearing a mask at school, next day we're not. Arguing with people in the medical field about what we should do, worrying about ourselves and our own health, our family's health, losing loved ones. I was shocked at a couple of people who had actually got COVID. I know who passed away. So I don't laugh at it, not at all. I respect it, but I also respect the right to life. And we went from my body, my choice to I'll tell you what you need. That freaked me out. That's when I started ordering the microphones and the things. And we may be talking about corn and soybeans and tillage and agronomy, but really, the people in agriculture were like, what's going on? Because they never stopped. Agriculture never stopped. So one day you went to the store and you couldn't get the exact brand of pasta you wanted. I don't know anyone who starved during the pandemic. I mean, the food kept coming. One day you couldn't get steak. You had chicken. The next day you had pork. And again, then the steak showed up and you bought extra. And you had to take it easy on the toilet paper a little bit too for a while. But we got caught up in the supply
chain. But in the ag community, that's the last thing they're worried about.
Like, yeah, they're like, what's going on? What are you guys doing in the big cities? You all right? And now as we go through, we're coming to midterms and everything else, it'll be interesting, the spin on this. But I don't watch TV anymore. And I get my news more from you guys, or I get it from YouTube. I go to YouTube, and if there's something I like, I have TV. I pay for TV. I have several sources of TV. I have DirecTV, Sling. I have access to it all. I could pop it on. If there's a Federal Reserve meeting, trust me, there's four TVs going. I'm watching it. But I get to choose. But I shut it off. And then I started consuming content that I want. Now, there's the good and bad in that, Chris. If you have one opinion, you'll just keep consuming enough of that opinion and you'll get cognitive dissonance where you're just like...
Unless you're very intentional about making sure you're watching things that challenge your opinion.
And I do that a little bit. I'll put on CNN for 5 minutes, put on Fox, and I go, it's got to be somewhere in the middle. Let me figure this out.
Yeah. And I think what's happened in a media sense is you can have any flavor of news that you want. And I think the smartest people are the ones that watch both or watch five of them, and then they discern whatever the facts are. I think the age where you can go to any one media outlet and just say, I trust them unequivocally with whatever they're telling me, I think that age is long, 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 long gone, and probably should be gone. But when America listened to Walter Cronkite tell them the news at 5 o'clock, they, I think, were fairly intelligent in trusting that Walter was telling them exactly what they needed to know. And he did it very respectfully.
He was the one who did when Kennedy died live, right? When he took his glasses off.
Yeah.
And he said, this is what's going on. Remember that?
But back in those days, broadcaster or journalist like that would tell America the facts and then leave them to their opinion. We're in an age now where most media say, not only is this our opinion, this is our campaign to influence you to think like however we're thinking. And whether that's on TV or print, I don't particularly think that's their business. I'd much rather listen to or read a source that's going to give me all kinds of perspective, and then I can choose. Even in our world, we don't touch politics or any of that kind of stuff at all. But you need, even in our world, I know I might write an article that says XYZ is a wonderful person and I like that they do, you know, A, B, and C things. Someone else might be lives right next door to him and they're like, that guy's a total jag and he's always yelling at my kids. I'm not an arbiter of who's good and who's not good. I just like to tell stories and they come to us by the dozens or the hundreds, like you talked before. There's thousands of stories that we could do. We have a Life in the Spotlight series that we've done for 7 or 8 years. There's probably 1,000 people across the 4 sites that we've profiled. It's a tiny fraction of what's out there in terms of what you can tell.
But this word you use in your website, hyperlocal, what's that mean? And I really think through this podcast, I'm confident in the next few weeks, next few months, you're going to get a phone call from someone in a small community that says, can I mimic what you do at Valpo Life? That should be flattering to you, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll help them do it.
Do you have anything like that? Do you have a course? Should you be starting a course?
I probably
should.
Can
I help you start a course on how to mimic Valpo Life? I think it's fascinating.
I'm the worst person in the world probably, and that's maybe a little self-critical, but I'm probably the least adept at making what we do more repeatable without me, because I'm so hands-on that I'm more like, oh, don't worry about that. Like, I'll train somebody to do that later, because I know how to do it now, and let's not have them mess with it. So your kind of thinking would be helpful for someone like me of, no, how do you get this next started and the next started, the next started? You know, where
because you have more than Valpo Life, people.
Yeah, we have more than Valpo Life. We've essentially grown, every time we've grown about 100%. So I wanted to prove that it could work in one community. So we started in Valpo, that's where I live and what we wanted to begin with. After that, we had a mayor from Portage invite us up there. And I said, well, we want to be in more than one community, so I guess Portage is the second one. And then we expanded out to LaPorte County, including Michigan City and LaPorte, so we were one, then two, then 3, 4. Then we expanded out into Lake County, and that's taken us quite a few years to actually really immerse ourselves in that, just because by population size, school size, the number of cities covered, when you're going to go do graduations in Lake County, for example, well, there's 20 or 25. So as we expand, our biggest challenge is always people. And a given graduation season will cover 45 graduations between high schools and colleges across the region. It's awesome. I love doing it. People love it. They love what we take and they love us capturing those memories, but you still got to have people at 45 events over probably like a 17-day period.
You've captured, you and your crew, your team have captured pictures that, you know, people pay someone to take pictures of their kid. And then all of a sudden, how many pictures do you have?
A little over 700,000 pictures that we've taken in a dozen years. And it's broken down by gallery, and there's well over 5,000 galleries.
Where's all this? In the cloud?
It's all in the cloud. It's all on Amazon services called SmugMug, which you know, ultimately owned by, you know, a larger and larger and larger entity. But all that stuff is there. So we've got graduations going back 12 years at most of the schools here in Porter County, probably 6, 7 years, 10 years at other schools. But our biggest opportunity is finding the mom or dad that doesn't know that photo of their kids celebrating during that match is online. And what we've captured are, we don't generally cover or capture stock imaged kind of things. Even like when we cover graduation, we don't take the stereotypical picture of the kid standing there and they're holding their graduation and it looks perfect. we take storytelling pictures. So I want to take a picture of the two kids embracing. I want to take a picture of the kid that's like frantically waving at their mom in the stands. I want to take a picture of the tear coming down the kid's face as they're that excited. I don't want to take average pictures. We want to take rock star pictures of kids so that they see themselves as I see them. Because
real life moments.
Yeah, real life moments. And what I like capturing is, and it's what we do every day, you watch kids compete. Your kids have been in soccer and in gymnastics, but every single thing we capture kids doing, whether it's a band concert or whether it's the spell bowl or they're competing on a basketball court or a gymnastics meet, they're trying as hard as they possibly can all week long, practicing day after day after day, competing as hard as they possibly can. Walk into a chamber lunch, and there's 200 people at a chamber lunch. How many of those people are working as hard as they possibly can? Probably like 7%. But on a JV basketball team, it's 100%. Every day, every practice, week after week after week. And the kid that's the 12th person on the team that hardly ever plays, they work that hard just for the opportunity to play someday. Think about us as adults. We mostly get into a mode of, I'll do exactly what I have to do and nothing more, and I generally want that to be less over time. I think kids should be more, or I think adults should be more like kids.
Getting after it.
Yeah. And you watch kids. I mean, on a cross-country team, there could be a kid that's 4 minutes behind everybody else, and he runs his absolute rear end off every single step of the way. And you're thinking, my God, what if all of our bankers did that and all of our lawyers did that and our politicians did that and our leaders and corporate people did that? Amazing how productive America would be if we all worked as hard as a seventh grade basketball player.
I couldn't agree with you more. And taking a few months off and telling everyone stay home and watch Netflix was probably not the best thing too. Some people never came out of that. They just, you know, you hire a lot of people. I looked at your website and the incredible amount of lives you're touching. But tell me what you're doing, the younger kids, these high school kids, because you need people to catch all this content. How are you finding these young people? How can young people find you? How's it work from the top of Valpo Life down to the bottom?
We love students, A, because I really want to develop the communicators of the future. I always think people have a voice. They just don't know how to use it. And probably the common denominator, if you look at all of the people that have worked for us all the years, is discipline, common sense, and their ability to learn and adapt that has made them great. And what we've probably provided for them is a little bit like a boot camp of work. And so we've got a number one student, Northwest Indiana Journalism Program, for example, where we've got anywhere from 25 to 45 kids at any given time that report every month to us in a paid internship program. And they report every month to us about a teacher that's doing good things, a program that's upcoming, that's positive, something that's transpired in the last month that's positive, and another one of a student spotlight shout out. And we're training those kids to be regular communicators. And
like it's a snitches get stitches, but with a reward.
But with
like
a, with a reward in a positive
snitches get
way.
Stitches.
Oh, God, I haven't heard that probably in 20 years.
Well, you heard it today, my friend.
But we're training these kids to be communicators. And it's not just we send them a note and say, send us whatever you want. It's pretty darn structured. And the first time or two that they're submitting it, they probably get a corrections list that's 10, 12 things long. But these kids are saying, no, if you're going to write according to this format, then write exactly according to that format. And if it needs to be X number of words, it can't be less than X number of words. It needs to be that number of words. If it's got four sections to it, you can't have three. And much of that, I think, is helping them learn work skills as much as it is learn journalism. But then the great part for the kids is they all get published. So that's
their names in the story.
Yeah, their names in the story. They're the masthead or they're the byline in the story. Any of those kids can now go to their own custom page on our website and say, hey, Susan Smith's reporting for Lowell High School is all here on this page, and you'll see everything that she's ever written. She
it's
then
be
goes
great
on
for the college application.
She then goes on to college, and she's like, "Yes, I've been published, and I'm not just going to give you a Word doc of all this stuff. Here's the 18 things I published over 2 years for Northwest Indiana Life." And they can link that, and they could see it live, and that's then shared by their teachers and other people on social media, sometimes the school administration officials. So this kid that's writing for Lowell High School, because a journalism teacher introduced them to us, often is then getting recognition from the superintendent of schools. Oh my God, I just read her monthly contribution of good news. What a great ambassador she is for our school system. And those kids then go on, and we've got kids that work, two different students that work at the FBI. We've got a student that works at Buzzsprout. We've got a student that works now many years down the road, Sports Illustrated. The athletic director at Valpro University is a past student of ours. A city councilman at Portage is a past student of ours.
All people who contributed to the...
All people that started as students, the journalistic students, just writing one thing a month. And most of them...
Does the high school... Go back a little. I'm a little confused. We should probably be saying that a lot on this show for many episodes to come. Does the high school work with you with this? Are they teamed with you? Are you a partner?
We look for them to do it. But we also recognize when we were first starting this out, sometimes the high school doesn't have a really established program, or they might have an established program and they've got two kids working on it, but they need those two kids working on everything they're going to do to put out their yearbook or their newspaper or their radio show. So we try to work in concert with the journalism teacher or the yearbook person or an English teacher, a guidance person. But sometimes the interest comes from the principal or the superintendent, where someone from Hobart Schools might call us up and say, "Hey, doesn't it look like you got a student program and you don't have somebody from our high school? Can we talk to somebody?" And
if someone just by chance is listening to this podcast and they want to get more involved in Northwest Indiana, who do they call?
That you can email. Probably the easiest common email is just share, the word share, at greatnews.life. That goes to myself and a handful of other people that all know what to do with it. If it's a student reach out or a teacher or a business that wants to market or somebody that's looking to see if we covered the cross-country meet, that's probably the easiest common thing. But all of our sites are nwi.life, which primarily focuses on Lake County, but it's got spillover sort of for the region. Then there's Portage Life and Valpo Life in Porter County, and then LaPorte County Life is out in LaPorte County. And later this year, we're launching in South Bend, Michiana, Mishawaka area. And the goal is ultimately to take this everywhere.
And what do you need to do then?
I mean, and people.
Yeah.
They're each challenging in their own way, probably.
There's a lot of money out there right now, Chris, and I'm not saying that just off the cuff.
They can definitely
more...
email that share at greatnews.life, yeah. too. I'd love that. The challenge, and you touched a little bit on it when you talked about COVID and the current business environment. The challenge right now is probably more people than it is money. And you need the time, and I tend to be a real control person, so anything that we've ever launched, I always knew, if we're going to launch it, can I actually stay on top of it myself? I've got a woman, Jenny Craig Brown, mm-hmm. started with me over 8 years ago. She's absolutely my partner in every sense of the word from a work standpoint. Just phenomenal. Completely in sync with me. Completely the same kind of personality. She's sort of a female version of Chris, and she's a perfect balance to me while staying pretty darn similar. And she really is the team leader every day. And there's a great story, the kind of atmosphere it is. Jenny started 8+ years ago as the assistant to my assistant. So she was technically the lowest person on the company totem pole. She's our executive director. She runs everything.
So if you die tomorrow,
day.
Jenny's got it.
Jenny's absolutely got it. And she'd probably push me out of the way in about 2 seconds. And she may be listening to this and planning for it already for all
I'm
of my
sure
bills.
There's a plan, yeah.
But she, and I look at it as I got a work wife and I've got a home wife. And I'm fantastically lucky that those two absolutely are in sync, and they cognitively manage me, literally my work wife and my home wife. So they'll trade notes sometimes about, hey, I need him to do this, and well, you need him to do that, so you get him to do this, and I'll get him to do that. And I love it. My life's better managed by two strong women.
Got one or two last questions before we wrap it up, but we'll be doing this again. I'm confident in that. And what's the most positive thing that's ever happened? You mentioned the story about the dentist saving someone's life. I would put that up there. I don't know that you could do better than that. Can you up that one?
Probably the one that impacted me the most, and maybe it was just the timing or her particular words, but there was a woman that emailed us and said, I didn't know that you profiled my husband 5 years ago. And the only reason I knew is because someone brought it to us at his funeral. And I read it and I cried and I couldn't stop crying because it's the perfect encapsulation of him. And no one has ever written anything about him before. Your writer totally understood him and did a beautiful thing. And I just wish I had known about it 5 years ago. Would have read it 100 times.
You think he didn't tell her?
I don't think he knew. He was an older gentleman, and probably people that he worked with knew, or people that were associated with him knew. And he probably, or she probably wasn't on Facebook or wasn't on Twitter or isn't on our newsletter list. And it's a very telling example of the stories. My passion is telling the story. What I always want to do a better job of is getting that story to the people that want to see the story, the people that want to see the picture. But it was very impactful to me to know that one of our writers, and it wasn't me, one of our writers did a beautiful, touching tribute of this man. And she was like dumbfounded. She loved it so much. And I just said to myself, I want to keep doing those stories, but I want to get to every one of those ladies and make sure that she knows we wrote about her husband. Mm-hmm. Because that picture of your girls mm-hmm. together, it doesn't mean anything unless you saw it. And I know out of those 700,000 pictures, or we've done 65,000 stories in 12 years, I know there's a lot of people that don't know their stories up there. So probably the best advice I would tell people is go to one of those sites, Valpa Life or Portage Life or LaPorte County Life or Northwest Indiana Life, and just search yourself. Go Google yourself. Go look online.
I found one of me the other day.
Really?
I forgot that when...
Life in the Spotlight?
I don't know what the heck it was. It was From Hero to Zero is what the title was. It was when CNBC came to the basement and you covered it. I told you, hey, guess what? CNBC's coming to Valpo. And I was Googling something about myself and it's like, CNBC came to Valpo. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And Chris covered it. I'm like, how cool is that?
I view myself as unbelievably blessed. Like everybody, I get up every day and via Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or email or text, whatever the heck it is, people have messaged me from the night before saying, hey, did you get this news? Did you hear about? Did you know? And what they're sending me are stories of Dennis that saved people's lives, or the kid that saved somebody's life, or the cause that got generated because somebody's life was lost. And I looked at it as, if you want the Boy Scout to be the hero, you got to put him on the front page of the paper. So we put the Boy Scout on the front page of the website. And I bet you there's 20 stories about Boy Scouts in our library of stuff. And there could probably be 200 if we were really getting after every single one of them. And if you invite enough people in, you're going to learn whether they support that mission or not. You might go talk to a farmer or an agricultural association, and they haven't invested in technology. They haven't gotten all of the information of market resources that they could. And you know you could help them, but you got to engage them in which to help them. And to me, circle it all back to what you're doing here. You're ultimately trying to help more people learn from what you've learned, and you're just using technology to get it out to them. So back to your question about what is media, it's ultimately the content. You interviewing people and telling their story, that's of interest wherever the heck they are. So that person that's in the small town in Iowa or North Dakota or Nebraska or wherever the heck it is, they could start this. It really wasn't that hard.
We would help them.
Yeah, we would help them.
Because we've made the mistakes already.
I've made every one. Like, I'm certain I've gone through every book possible. I definitely made every one. But if you don't try, you definitely aren't going to succeed. And I looked at it as the number one challenge was, if I was going to go out and be the guy that proved good news could work, I was also going to be the guy that proved good news didn't work if it failed. So you talk zero to hero. You know, if you're the one that says, buzz off all you traditional media, I'm going to show you, which I sort of did, you better do it. Otherwise, it's really uncomfortable to be the one that said, no, traditional media, you don't really get it. I'm going to focus on the positive, and then you fail.
Well, you just basically, would have loved that. They would have loved it.
And right. That's back to the shaving point of when I'm there shaving in the morning, and I'm like, Masterson, you just can't be right. You just can't. I can't allow you to be right. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, over time, if I was really smart, we would have grown this much in 3 years. But I was as smart as I am, so it took me a dozen.
Chris, when you think about disruptors, who's shaking it up out there?
I would say there's a lot of people shaking it up on there. If you think regionally, the Mayor McDermott here out of Hammond is a strong disruptor. He looks at it and says, anyone that's communicating to any media, I want to be controlling that narrative. So he acts almost like his own media. Gary Vaynerchuk is a tremendously outspoken person that essentially looked at how all of these people are paying ad agencies and communication mechanisms to go communicate with people when they could be communicating via electronic channels just directly on their own. Joe Rogan, I think we now see, is one of the strongest independent voices in media today because he set himself out to ask questions other people might not want to ask. But I think it shows you the power of the story, and it actually shows you the power of the communication has gone to the person producing the content. You don't need CNN or Fox or ABC or NBC or CBS or the local newspaper or any media company. Those people are aggregators, but they don't control the narrative anymore. And I think you look at somebody like Joe, look at the range of people he's had on that podcast and the kinds of things they talked about. Many of those things are things that probably a few years ago people said, you can't talk about that. You can't do that. You can't do that on TV. You can't do that on the radio. And I think he's looked at it very unconventionally and said, no, watch me.
Chris, I have to ask you, are you a disruptor?
I wouldn't have thought I was, but it ended up being much more than I thought it would be. I knew when we were starting this, we had to take a different approach to what we were doing and to what had been done in media for this to be successful. I wasn't aware of how much establishment might work against a new upstart. I was used to a very competitive environment where if I was selling you a futures horse and you had a CQG and I could do it for less money, I might be able to earn your business, and or maybe I could get new studies or charts or something on our platform that would make it competitive. I wasn't aware that starting a new local media would upset the mayor or would upset a media company, or people would be told, don't do business with that company because they're different, they're new. I wasn't expecting to have somebody say to me, well, who are you to tell us what's going on in Valpo? You're not even from here. And I looked at it very simply of like, I didn't realize I was doing something so revolutionary. I just wanted to say a bunch of nice stuff about your people. Like, I didn't think it was that weird. But in every market, you know, not just market related, but every segment of the market that you ever talk to, people are very parochial of, well, we've always done it this way. And we would go to the popcorn fest and take 400 times more pictures than a local media might do. And then there's times where people said, well, you're picking on the local paper. That's not fair. And I'd say, I have like four people up in my garage. They have 150 employees. I don't think it's, I'm not picking on them. I'm just presenting an alternative. But I for sure learned in the process, starting the business is hard. The institutional resistance sometimes people have, I came out and said, this is going to be the coolest thing for Valpo, and it's really positive. Well, as soon as I said that, people are like, well, who are you to tell us that? You're not from here.
If I think what's happening is happening in America, and you ask for help, and show other people in rural communities how to do what you did. And I think your greatest achievement may just be starting. So what you started in Northwest Indiana, if you could show other people in rural communities, and that's why I wanted to have you on today. Well, one, just look up to you for everything. But if you could show people in small towns how to cover their high school, how to get started, the last question I have is, what does someone need to get started? Maybe we can't do it in one show, but what someone need in a small town to get started? Or that's probably too big for you to answer. Why don't you wait on that one? Because okay. We'll do episode two, because that's a big one. We'll have you back and say, hey, this is Chris. This is what he did in his small town. This is what you could do in your small town.
I the main thing I would tell people, just to maybe pique their interest for that next session, is it's easier than you think, and it's far easier than I did it.
That's wonderful. Last favor I need from you. As you and your group travel, I want you to tell people about what we're doing. If they're involved in agriculture, if there's someone you see in Northwest Indiana or anywhere who has a story in agriculture and you think it should get covered, I would love to have them down here, and whether it be the local butcher or the people raising the cattle. We were a agricultural community until everyone decided to move from Illinois to Indiana.
I've watched sort of some of that transition happen, and it's cool to see the roots of the region still, you know, a lot of that being agricultural, particularly here in Porter County and South Porter County. I'm already thinking about a couple that I can pass you on to.
Thanks. Hey, everyone, that's Chris Melman from Valpo Life. Best way to get a hold of you? Best website?
Overall, best website is just greatnews.life, www.greatnews.life. If you want to reach me personally, chris@greatnews.life, or if you want to reach anybody in the company, which I'll also get, is share@greatnews.life. You could find us on Facebook, on all of those various platforms, Twitter,
TikTok.
LinkedIn.
As of today,
now you'll
TikTok.
Find me on TikTok, and I'll probably have to record something with Tommy here to memorialize the occasion. But more than anything else, thanks for having me. Like,
my pleasure.
The studio is off the charts. Like, I love it. I love the ticker on the wall.
It's just all to help control my ADHD. I like lights. That's all.
People laugh at me in my office. I've got the TV on, radio going. I like to have something also playing on my iPad or my phone at the same time. I need 3 or 4 sources of visual information just to try to even be focused or productive at all. So I'm very much the same way. But this is cool as heck. I love seeing the boards because it reminds you of being on the floor. Like, those are good memories.
Well, we'll end it there, my friend. But I got a feeling people will be seeing a little bit more of you. And I got a couple ideas that we could do to work together. Everyone, that's Chris Melman from Valpo Life. Till next time, my name's Tommy Grisafi, and I'm bullish agriculture.